Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia El-Khoury.
And I'm Shirley Heyman. Thanks for choosing to listen in to the best show around for parents. As Lydia said, we're on Radio Verulam and it's 92.6 FM, or maybe you're listening on your laptop. What we try to do for you is find the best advice around for all of us who care for children, whether they're babies or primary age or teenagers. And tonight I think we've done that yet again. We've got some great guests lined up for you. So in the studio tonight we've got Catherine Tate, who's a local expert in nutrition and specialises in, well, lots of things, but particularly helping teens. And we think that's really appropriate tonight. I don't know if you've seen what's in the news with exam stress. And then on the phone in a minute, we're going to have Dale Pinnock. And Dale is known as the medicinal chef. He's on TV quite often. And he, too, is going to have a lot of really useful advice for us tonight, all about nutrition and keeping our teens healthy at this time of the academic year.
And, of course, there's SATs going on at the moment as well. So it's not even secondary school. There's huge amounts of stress going on in primary schools as well. You know, I've heard some horror stories in and around where I live of children getting themselves so worked up, you know, to the point of actually feeling ill because of the stress of SAT. So it's such an important topic to be covering.
Yeah. And then, Lydia, if we'd go down a little bit more, you know, we've got our 6 and 7 year olds doing their phonics screening check, haven't we, now as well?
That's it, in June. So, come June. Yeah. That's the week going in. The only thing about that is I'm not sure they even know that they're having a test, which is exactly how it should be. You know,
let's hope they don't.
Yeah. I don't think there's much build up to it, so they can't allow themselves to get too stressed. But the SATs and all the other exams in secondary school are definitely something to be concerned about.
So we're hoping to speak to Dale Pinnock on the line. Evening, Dale, are you there?
I am indeed. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, very well.
Just come back in the country, we hear. Been travelling.
Yeah, and brought some bad weather with me, which isn't good, but never mind.
we'll let you off. We're so grateful to have you on. And we've got your friend, colleague in the studio with us tonight. So you know Catherine,
hello,
don't you?
Catherine.
Hi, Dale. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, you too.
So, Dale, I mean, I don't know if you saw the news today. You may not have had a chance, but there's a surge in young people seeking help because of exam stress. Mm. So fits in, you know, quite nicely, actually, sadly, with our subject tonight. Now, we were sort of having a look at you and the kind of things that you preach. And one of the things that I think affected you when you were younger was you were told, unless you change what's happening on the inside, nothing's going to change on the outside of the body. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. That was the kind of little lecture that switched things on for me. And I was about 15 at the time. It wasn't anything to do with exam stress and anxiety. But it was, I guess, there was a lot of stress and anxiety just because of my own skin problems and skin issues. But yeah, that little pearl of wisdom was the thing that changed it for me.
And that's what got you interested in nutrition, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And is it true you've read over 1,000 books on nutrition now?
Easily, because I mean that was 23 years ago now.
Wow.
So in that period of time, I've read an awful lot. But then obviously, when I was a student, I finally ended up going to university to study it. Did my undergrad in human nutrition, and then later on did a postgrad in nutritional medicine. So there was a lot of reading around that as well, obviously. So it must be that number.
Okay, well done. Dale, I'm just going to sort of go straight in there. Can you give us some advice on the sort of science behind the foods that we can feed our teenagers at this, you know, this time of the academic year?
Wow, okay.
Or you know, start where you like. It's such a big topic, isn't it?
It's huge. It's absolutely massive. And, you know, there's so many important areas to address for so many different reasons. I mean, I guess probably the place that I would start, and you know, I think this kind of ticks several boxes, is definitely including the right kinds of fats in the diet. And it's all about the omega-3 fatty acids. I should imagine everyone's heard of omega-3.
Yeah,
it's been in headlines for quite a few years now. Omega-3 fatty acids are absolutely vital for the normal functioning and health of the nervous system and the brain. They regulate everything from the physical structure of our nerve cells.
Mm-hmm.
So within nervous tissue, you've got a huge high density of fats. These fats actually make up the cell walls of the neurons, very important in the way that signals move along nerve cells, right through to actually having an impact on cognition,
right,
on learning, on memory, retention, and also, you know, in situations where there is stress and anxiety, the right fats in the diet can actually influence the activity of neurotransmitters, the actual chemicals that are carrying communications between nerve cells. So their effects are very, very broad-reaching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you sent me sort of a like an overview of questions earlier, and one of the things in there that really stood out was, you know, parents often tell their children to eat fish to improve the brain's function. That's exactly where that old saying comes from.
Okay.
The omega-3 fatty acids are found predominantly in oily fish. You will hear some people say, oh, you can get things like walnuts, nuts and seeds. They're not very effective. For the simple reason, I mean, how far down the rabbit hole do you want me to go? Basically, the omega-3 fatty acids that you find in things like nuts and seeds, for example, they're in a form called ALA, which human beings would actually need to convert into slightly different types of fatty acids before we could actually use them. Now, the fish swim in the upper layers of the water can do that process really, really effectively, then store those fats in their tissues, so it's already preformed for
it.
So
that's interesting.
It's in there and it's doing its job, because when we talk about omega-3, there's actually four different fats that come under the omega-3 family. ALA, EPA, DPA and DHA. ALA is the form that we find in plants. Human beings actually need to convert it into the EPA and DHA so we can actually get it into the brain and do something with it. But we are notoriously bad at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from pregnant women, that can do it up to about 25%. Otherwise, it's about a 6% conversion. So a handful of seeds is not going to give you anything.
Okay.
Fish do it really, really well. So fish 2 or 3 times a week is going to give you a really good intake of those fats.
So have you sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, that's the first thing that springs to mind. That's the first ingredient.
Right. Yeah, I mean, have you got any sort of, you know, really delicious ways that parents can get fish into their children? I mean, I know lots of children will eat sea bass these days, you know, fried and stuff. Is that good enough? Or
sea bass is kind of a middle ground. I mean,
yeah,
even though it's a white fish, it does have a reasonable amount of omega-3, but absolutely nowhere in comparison to the very, very oily fish. Obviously, with some of the oily fish, you've got a bit of a sliding scale when it comes to flavour. You've got the very strongly flavoured ones like herrings and mackerel. I mean, good luck getting most adults to eat that, let alone kids. But salmon is that one that tends to be, you know, quite well tolerated. You can get a really good homemade fish finger. If you can get a nice thick salmon fillet, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, any kind of fancy wild Alaskan whatever, just a good quality salmon fillet. Cut the skin off the bottom, cut it into buttons, and then roll it in something like oatmeal.
Right.
Just to give it like a coating, and then bake it in the oven.
That sounds like even my 4 and 6 year old wouldn't balk at that. But in preparation for the show this evening, Dale, I made the meat mackerel yesterday, and I had to hide it in spaghetti hoops. Does that just so there was almost you couldn't even tell there was mackerel in it? And I bribed them left, right, and centre. But is it worth doing?
It really is worth doing. I mean, I was literally from as younger age as you could get it in them, because it's so vital for neurological development, especially the fatty acid DHA. EPA, DHA. EPA has more of an effect on kind of neurotransmitters and inflammation and that kind of stuff. DHA is the structural fatty acid. Fatty acid that's actually involved in laying down that fatty tissue that is so important in brain development. So it's really, really worthwhile trying to get it in them. And you know what? Duping them with flavours, I'm all for that.
Even if it's spaghetti hoops.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Lydia, so you don't feel so bad now.
It was half virtuous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So,
it was.
What about your opinion, Dale, on, you know, 3 square meals a day as opposed to letting children snack between exams? And, you know, is there any sort of good science behind this 3 square meals a day?
Well, you know what? I would actually bring the two things together. My chain of thought is, rather than 3 sort of hoofing great ginormous meals that can make anyone feel like they've been shot with a tranquilizer dart anyway, three good meals. I mean, it is vital to have an important breakfast. You know, really, a good breakfast, a good quality breakfast, good protein in it, maybe some slow-release carbohydrates, and, you know, have a good lunch and a good dinner. But snacking in between keeps blood sugar levels topped up. That's going to be important around this time for two reasons. Stable blood sugar means stable concentration. Okay,
yeah.
So if you've not got that blood sugar roller coaster, then you're going to be able to concentrate more effectively. The worst thing that could happen to them in an exam is for all of a sudden for their sugar levels to come down. Halfway through, getting a blood sugar crash, that is going to affect the way in which the brain's functioning. You're not going to think clearly. You're going to be hungry. You're going to get... There's that new word that's kind of doing the rounds. Have you ever heard that expression, hangry?
No.
Oh, you haven't heard? Oh,
no.
That one applies to me. Right, hangry is saying, like, when you get hungry, you kind of get a bit angry, a bit antsy, a little bit fidgety and uncomfortable because your blood sugar's dropping. You don't want that in the middle of an exam. So definitely snacking before an exam would be really, really, really important, you know, because we want to make sure that the brain has got sufficient fuel that blood sugar isn't going to crash. But the type of snack is going to be important. Something like a chocolate bar, it might give them a little bit of a boost, but what goes up very quickly will come down very quickly.
Yeah.
So they might walk into the exam feeling absolutely fantastic, but then 10 minutes later, once all the insulin's kicked in and done its job, blood sugar is going to come back down and they'll be back to square one, probably feeling, you know, pretty spaced out as well.
Mm.
So something like, I mean, you could do some kind of homemade flapjack, I guess. I mean, something with like some nut butters in it, for example. So you made like a peanut butter oat bar. So rather than just a flapjack with like the golden syrup and the brown sugar and all that kind of stuff, you could add peanut butter, you could add some mashed bananas, add like a little bit of honey perhaps. Something like that is a little bit more dense. Only a small amount of it. And because there's a lot of protein in the nuts and oats are pretty much a slow-releasing carbohydrate, that kind of concoction of those two, good quality protein, slow-release carbohydrate, is going to take a very, very long time to break down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to leave the stomach quite slowly, which means it's going to drip-feed blood sugar rather than carpet vomit. So that will sustain their energy for longer periods of time.
That's lovely. That's great ideas. I love that with peanut butters rather than...
And it tastes fantastic too, you know, rather than, you know, tasting like a bit of old cardboard, it's actually something they want to eat.
Yeah. And Dale, how much... would you manage this for your children? I mean, would you pack up little snacks for them and send them off during the day, especially like in secondary school? Would you go that far or just try and get them to take control of it themselves?
If you've got the time to do that, fantastic. Absolutely. I mean, I know so many people that do. And, you know, obviously some of the abominations that are in vending machines, school, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I get that we've all got time pressures, so, you know, I'm not in any way being preachy. If you've got time to do it, fantastic. If not, just, you know, add as much of the fresh stuff in there as you can.
And what about drinks, Dale, then? You know, because, again, parents aren't necessarily going to have time to make a smoothie first thing in the morning, or can you give us some tips there?
You know what, I'm going to be really boring on this one, to be
water.
Honest. I would say, you know, water, or if you want something that's actually got a bit of flavour to it, maybe something that's milk-based, but ideally not with too much sugar in it.
Right.
Because at least there's some protein in there, at least there's some fat in there, so it's going to be a little bit more filling. Rather than the awful, awful, awful fizzy drinks, especially the energy drinks, like the example that you gave me in those questions, those things are terrible. They really are absolutely awful. The amount of sugar in there is unbelievable. That's just going to be... You know, that's not going to do them any favours in the short or the long term. It's going to send their blood sugar up really, really quickly. They're going to feel fantastic for 10 minutes and then it's going to be like, slumped afterwards. So just water. If I don't drink water, then maybe something milk-based.
So, I mean, the irony of what you're saying, Dale, is definitely, like, slumps come out of energy drinks. So you see all these children around exam times and they've all got an energy drink in their hand. So actually it's the worst possible thing they could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, that's...
It certainly is, yeah.
Really?
So that's the thing. And again, it's just giving them those little nuggets of information, I guess. Just saying, look, I understand the temptation to go for something like this. You think it's going to switch you on and gear your brain up, but really it isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just think of it like a firework. You let a firework off, a massive whoosh of energy, and all of a sudden it's burnt out and it comes crashing back down again. It's exactly the same thing. It's not going to sustain their brain function for long enough.
We were just talking, Dale, before we came on air about local schools and schools where they put coffee shops actually on site now for them. You know, I won't mention the names of them. And I see young children on the way to school in the mornings near where I live carrying their portable coffee cups where they've just come out of, you know, so many shops that sell that kind of thing these days. That's a concern, isn't it, when we've got 10, 11, 14-year-olds drinking coffee on the way to school, surely?
Oh, God, that'd be like... Yeah, that'd be pretty... Oh, well, I feel sorry for the teacher.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Because, you know what, I'm not saying maybe like a little bit of weak black coffee wouldn't necessarily be a problem. I mean, you know, they do it right across Europe, so it's not like it's necessarily harmful. But a strong coffee with probably lots of sugar in it and maybe some kind of syrup shot or something like that, it's going to be like wind them up and watch them go.
Yeah. It's also amazing how much impact that has on sleep, isn't it? The caffeine, which is really critical for that healthy brain development.
Vast impact. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for any age, I mean, caffeine after sort of lunchtime at the latest, I think, is the cut-off point. That's my cut-off point. If I have caffeine after 12, then, you know, forget going to sleep. So it's for kids where their system's much more kind of hyperactive anyway, it's definitely not going to help them wind down.
I think also as well, people aren't aware how much caffeine is in different things like soft drinks and also chocolate. You know, those things also have quite a high caffeine content.
They do, absolutely. Well, chocolate, you've got like this kind of heady cocktail. You've got caffeine and you've got theobromine. Theobromine is like caffeine's big bad ugly cousin. It's it's got like a longer lasting stimulant effect, so it has the same effect as caffeine, but apart from instead of working for like sort of 10 15 20 minutes, it can have that effect for 3 or 4 hours.
Do you know what's astounding from what you're saying, Catherine, and you, Dale, is that the two most basic things, nutrition and sleep, you think that that would be the main focus of what, you know, what children should be protected and given, and actually they're so simple, aren't they? You almost think, oh, things must have moved on, but actually that's what children need, isn't it? To concentrate, they need a good night's sleep, and they need proper food in their belly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's something that's important for us right through the lifespan. I guess this is something that Catherine's going to have much more experience about than I, but in schools, those kind of things aren't really that readily touched on. You know, it's not something that is kind of like a mantra throughout. It's just completely swept under the carpet. There are a few places that are actually leading by example and giving children good quality nutritional education, but they're in a minority.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely agree with you there. And I think parents are quite shocked about how much sleep children actually need. I think the National Sleep Foundation recommend for ages 10 to 17 between 8.5 and sort of 9.5 hours sleep a night. Parents are quite sort of shocked by that.
9.5 hours a night, that'd be lovely.
Yeah. Chance of being fine thing.
In those stages of development, it's absolutely vital. That's where, like, you know, repair and development takes place a lot of the time during that. So.
Now, Dale, can you just point our listeners to any of your books or, you know, any stuff that you've done that they can look at online that's going to help them in this area?
Well, I've not written specifically for children necessarily, but a lot of the rest, there's one of my books that's called Healthy Every Day that just for some reason seems to have a lot of recipes in that children are really enjoying. As I say, I didn't for 1 second specifically targeted it towards children.
No.
There's quite a lot of sort of portable meal ideas and nice little snacky things that seems to have gone down very well with parents and children. So that could be an interesting one.
Okay, great. Well, we'll certainly put that on our Facebook page. So Healthy Every Day. Okay, great. Dale, anything else that we haven't kind of touched upon that you think, you know, with all your experience and expert knowledge that you just want to share with our listeners?
I think maybe just kind of reiterating one of the important points. I mean, obviously we spoke about the facts and all that kind of stuff, but blood sugar balance is going to be a real, real key.
Okay.
To how they're going to be functioning mentally throughout the day. So I spoke about an example of a snack, something like the flapjack made with some peanut butter or something. But this magic combination of protein and slow-release carbohydrate is going to be the mantra when you're actually putting the meals together.
Okay.
So say if their breakfast was something like... I'm talking blue sky picture here. I know how children's brains can tick sometimes. But blue sky picture, something like, you know, eggs on a multigrain toast or some porridge with a boiled egg on the side or something mm-hmm. like that. So you've got good quality protein, slow release carbohydrates. The same, you know, same goes for lunch, same goes for dinner. The snacks, make sure they're not based on simple carbohydrates that are just going to suddenly carpet bomb their blood sugar.
Yeah.
Things that are going to drip feed it. Maybe protein-based snacks as well. So whether it is like a cold boiled egg, maybe even some cheese or something like that. Something that's going to have some fats, some protein that's going to keep them sustained, keep them full up. Not gonna cause those blood sugar crashes. That's going to be really, really important.
So, you know, to be honest, you're saying something like a cheese sandwich and wholemeal bread is better than eating some cereal with milk, really, because those cereals are really sugary, aren't they? And
most of the cereals, especially the ones that are geared towards children, I wouldn't give to my worst enemy. The marketing behind these products is beyond irresponsible. It's disgusting. So, absolutely. Absolutely. But I won't get on that rant.
Okay.
That's a different program.
But, I mean, I can even see it with my four-year-old wants to eat Rice Krispies. I just won't let her. It's not an option. But occasionally, once, maybe one night, one day of the weekend, and I can see the difference in her. A half an hour after she's eaten Rice Krispies, she is starving, and she wants something else to eat. I mean, if you allow them to do that going off to school, you're just passing the problem on to the teacher, aren't you? Because they'll have to deal with their hunger, you know, and the side effects of that. But I'm just looking at some of the recipes from your Healthy Every Day, or just some of the recipes that are included, Dale, and they are mind-blowing. I want to read out a few. So you've got Eggs Royale, Chili Chocomocca Breakfast Bomb. You have to explain that one to us. You've got Brunch of Beetroot and Smoked Mackerel Frittata. That sounds awesome. Choc and Nut Oat Bars, which would be perfect, obviously, to send your teen off for a mid-morning snack. Roast Root and Rocket Salad, Cheeky Chicken and Lettuce Roll-Ups, Miso Mushroom Noodle Soup. I mean, these all sound fantastic and really inspirational. And it's great knowing that you've already done the thinking for us. You know that it's got the right balance of things in there.
Well, this is it. I mean, obviously, people think that healthy food is all going to be like sort of beard, sandals, wonga wonga berries and rabbit food. I just want to prove to people that, well, you know, it can still be decadent. It can be really enjoyable. And it can do you good, and it can be easy, and it can be affordable. So that's going to be like the recurrent theme through all of it, is that, you know, even though some of the titles might sound a little bit fancy, they're really simple. They're really, really simple. To explain that chili chocomocca breakfast bomb, that is like a morning smoothie that you can have for breakfast. It's banana, milk, raw cacao powder, which is basically like unprocessed cocoa powder, a shot of espresso, woohoo, and a little bit of cayenne pepper to give it a kick. You could also add some like chocolate protein powder as well if you wanted to. You have that first thing in the morning. That's where you're going to start the day with a springy step.
I bet you will. I think you've just challenged the parent show team.
Although I had a bit of a funny experience with this one. I made it a cookery demo in Surrey a couple of weeks ago, and someone bought a really, really high strength concentrated cayenne extract, and I thought it was just a regular cayenne pepper. And literally there was about 50 old ladies in the audience. They had little shots of this stuff, and I've never seen so many people like with the colour drained from their face.
Oh my god, it was like notes to self, taking it out. Well, when you come to St. Albans, Dale, we'll make sure that you've got the right cayenne pepper.
Fantastic. I've not been to St. Albans for ages, so I'd love to.
Oh, well, we'd love to see you anytime. So thank you so much for coming on tonight. And you've given us some really good tips and some, you know, well-researched and very sensible advice. I'm sure our parents listening in are going to be making some of those things tomorrow. And I think the message that I'm hearing is, you know, this protein and slow-release carbs together are the things that are going to keep the children's and, their students' sugar levels, more balanced.
Exactly. And in the long-term picture, get those omega-3 fatty acids in.
Yeah, okay.
Even if it's in spaghetti hoops.
Even if it's in spaghetti cake.
So,
okay. I'll allow you that one.
Great stuff. Thanks a million, Dale. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
We were just talking there to Dale Pinnock, who calls himself the medicinal chef, and I'm sure you'll agree with us that he gave us some really, you know, nice, good ideas for our children, indeed for ourselves. And I think in the studio we're going to be ordering that book later. So you also heard talking just then Catherine Tate, who is our local expert. And Catherine, well, I'm going to let her tell you what she does. But anyway, Catherine, welcome.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
It's great to have you. Tell the listeners what you do locally for our children.
Okay, so I'm otherwise known as the food teacher. I do quite a lot of work in schools. I was originally a teacher and I trained last summer as a nutritional therapist, and I qualified after 3 years of studying. And now I sort of work across four different areas. I run the food teacher clinic, so I see a lot of clients on a one-to-one consultation basis, whether that's to review their health or to address their health issue. I also do quite a lot of work in schools. I do quite a lot of work within the community and delivering talks and events. And my other sort of field of work is sort of media. So I do a lot of writing for magazines and different articles.
So you're really well qualified to be talking to us this evening, aren't you? And I mean, you yourself said to me, didn't you, when you came in tonight, that it's just really a coincidence that the news that came through today about, you know, the stress levels of children really being high in the last sort of year, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's quite frightening as well, how the sort of the exam system is changing. So children now that will be coming through to GCSEs next year will be experiencing over 20 exams during their exam time. So that's a major amount of stress for these children.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let me give you I'm sure this is quite an easy question, really, but just tell me the foods that the children need to avoid during exam periods.
Okay, so we've touched on a few of those things. I talk about them as sort of anti-nutrients, things that kind of knock out the good things that we do. So we've already sort of touched on caffeine and how detrimental that can be. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly detrimental for the adolescent brain because it's going through its sort of final stages of development. So the brain goes through sort of three key stages, one during the third trimester during pregnancy, and then up to age two where it goes through a massive brain growth spurt. And then during adolescence, it sort of goes through this massive pruning where it sort of cuts back the things that it doesn't need. And it's a really key time for that whole brain development. So putting in anti-nutrients is really detrimental at that time. So things like caffeine, which we've touched on, artificial sweeteners are also majorly damaging to the cells of the brain.
Yeah.
That obviously provide energy to the brain, and they can actually break down some of those brain cells, so are quite damaging. So, you know, found in a lot of things like fizzy drinks, the low-fat products, a lot of those things are sweetened by these artificial sweeteners. Other things to be aware of are things like trans fats. These things can affect our cognition. So they're found a lot in junk food and highly processed foods. They basically alter the plasticity of the brain, which can then affect the sort of the brain communication and the messages that get sent across the brain. So they're also quite damaging. And also when you're a teenager, it's kind of when you want to be a bit more independent, you want to try new things and experiment a little bit with things. So things like alcohol and smoking, those are also really big sort of factors to be aware of that can affect that maturation process of the brain. So, you know, those sorts of things. And also, as Dale touched on, high sugar, that is also quite damaging because the effect on the blood sugar balance.
Catherine, could I ask you, when you talk about no alcohol, so what age range would you say it is acceptable to introduce alcohol?
Well, I would say 18 after the exams. I would recommend 18, obviously, just because of the potential long-term damage it can cause on the brain. You know, especially binge drinking. There's a lot in the press now about binge drinking and sort of the impact on the brain, especially the older brain. But during that adolescent period, because there's so much going on with the pruning and the sort of structuring of the brain, that's, you know, a key time that you want to avoid these things.
Is there any kind of, because I mean, I agree with you, and I you know, I can understand exactly what you're saying, but there is a lot of social pressure to drink, and even parents introducing drink into children's yeah. lives. Would you say it's acceptable a little from 16 on, or would you really be very stringent and say not before 18?
Well, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's very difficult because they want to be independent, and there's that peer pressure, isn't there, that kind of, you know, happens at that time. So yeah, maybe slightly in moderation, in a sort of managed way. And also with lots of water as well, because that's so important for the brain as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But water is a very tricky thing, I'd say, to get teens to drink, is it? I mean, I know as you get older, you get a little bit more responsible and aware of these kind of things. But do you find that that's a concept that's hard to embed?
It is difficult to embed, and there's some great strategies for sort of getting them to drink more water these days. I don't know if you've ever seen those water bottles that have like an infusion in the middle, and you can add fruits and, you know, lemon, citrus things into that water. They're really great water bottles to sort of go about, you know, with school and things like that.
And do you find the teens are actually enjoying those?
Yeah, no, they will. They do enjoy them, definitely, great. Definitely. Yeah.
And Catherine, with your work with teens in schools and families, you know, do you have any ideas that we can try and, you know, change their bad eating habits or encourage them to eat more healthily? Because, again, peer pressure, coffee shops in schools, you know, going up the town to meet your friends. What kind of techniques do you use?
I've found getting them involved is fantastic. You know, when I go into schools and I get them making smoothies, we'll talk about good fats, bad fats and sugar and things like that. It's great to get them involved. Also at home, you know, just role modelling that really good behaviour, you know, not having things in the house that you yeah. really don't want them to eat is a great way. And also getting them, you know, one night a week they cook. It's their night to cook. They prepare for the whole family. Just getting them involved, and perhaps getting Dale's books and getting yes. them cooking Dale's recipes yeah. would be a great way to...
That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned a magic word there, and Shirley and I have been waiting patiently since 8 o'clock, smoothies. You said smoothies, and Catherine has very kindly brought along a smoothie for us to try, haven't you, Catherine?
Absolutely. I thought I can't come. I'm, you know, it needs to be his one, something I made a bit earlier. So I've made a bit of a brain boosting smoothie, which would be great to drink just before you go in for an exam. I'll tell you a little bit about what I put in it. So I've basically put a little bit of spinach into it because it's great for. You might have to just undo that one there and then just pour it out. It's kind of like a straw.
Shirley's preparing the smoothies
first. Okay, so I've put a little bit of spinach in there. Spinach is great in a smoothie. Children just don't notice it's in there. I did some work with a primary school this week and we all made smoothies, and I said, look what I'm throwing in, and I threw in some spinach, and I asked them at the end, could you taste that? No, I couldn't. They couldn't taste it. So spinach is great. It's high in folate, which is brilliant for helping increase memory and concentration. The base ingredient is blueberries. So basically the brain is very metabolically active. It creates a lot of waste products, so antioxidants are really beneficial for the brain. They just help to clear all those waste products from the brain. So eating a rainbow, lots of berries, you know, they're really rich in flavanols. So I've put in some blueberries. I've put in a little bit of avocado because that's a great fat, will help to boost memory for the brain, and some seeds and some almond milk as the base.
Lovely.
So
I heard you slurping.
See what you think.
She's finished.
I finished.
She's done it.
It's delicious.
Now, I have to say, the colour is a little bit off-putting,
yes,
isn't it?
I did make it earlier. So I think when I made it, it was sort of purpley colour. So it's kind of changed a little bit in its colour. I think the folate in the spinach has kind of overtaken
and
the colour.
And I tell the listeners that it's actually kind of a muddy brown colour.
Did start purple, honestly.
But Catherine has brought in beautifully colour-coordinated straws as well to go with it, and a lovely bottle.
That's really nice.
It is.
And actually, I thought you'd have to put some, you know, strong fruit or veg like pineapple or something to overtake the taste of the others, but you haven't.
It balances nicely.
Lovely.
And also what I find with children when they're having exams is they get that butterfly feeling, sort of driven by the flight or flight feeling with the stress response, and sometimes sort of serving up a breakfast of eggs and, you know, smoked salmon seems like a great idea, but they just can't stomach it first thing in the morning. So a smoothie is a great way to sort of send them off to their exam. It just gives them the nutrients they need to help with the, you know, prepare for that exam.
And it's light. It's much lighter than something
that you buy in the shop. It's got a nice sort of almost bit of a powdery taste.
Okay.
Well, to me.
And And what would you add to, what kind of protein would you add to that to make it last, give you the kind of sustenance to make it last longer?
Well, I've put in a little bit of avocados, that's a little bit of good fat there, and you've got some seeds, and I put in some almond milk. But you can also add a little bit of protein powder, that might be a great way to sort of increase
would
the protein.
Would you advocate protein powder?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I would look for something that's organic and hormone-free. So a good quality whey protein powder is great. And if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you can look for a sort of a pea protein. They're also great. And you can get vanilla flavoured or chocolate flavoured. So work really well in a smoothie. I often get asked by parents, you know, what can I hide in a smoothie? I want my child to eat things. Can you recommend things to hide? Spinach is a great one. Just don't put too much in because it can change the colour.
So what would be enough? Like a small handful?
A small handful, yep, that's great. And the other thing that I put in smoothies, which always seems to work and no one seems to notice, is frozen cauliflower. That's a great one.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it gives it a little bit of creaminess and it's nice and cooling. That works great. And children never know.
And what's cauliflower good for?
Well, cauliflower is a cruciferous vegetable. It's great for sort of cleansing the body and liver support. So really good for helping clear all of that sort of waste from the body.
It's a swear word in my house.
Oh.
It is a swear word. It's not allowed near the kitchen.
Well, get it in a smoothie and no one's going to know.
That's fantastic. So NutriBullet, are you talking about doing them that way or simply putting them in
I'd put them in the NutriBullet, definitely. And then you've got the fibre as well. So when Dale talked about blood sugar balancing, having that fibre helps to slow down the release of the sugar. So that's brilliant. And NutriBullets are amazing.
They're just gone crazy, aren't that everybody's got a NutriBullet.
Yeah.
We don't. Do you?
I don't know. I was going to ask Catherine what it is.
It's basically a pulverizer, they say. It's like a type of blender that pulverizes vegetables, nuts, seeds, pips, stalks, everything, just to a complete liquid. And it was actually one of the best-selling products at Christmas. And John Lewis reported they sold one every 30 seconds over the Christmas period.
Oh.
So I think pretty much nearly every house has got one these days.
Except us two.
So it's better than a juicer.
It has different benefits to a juicer, but what you're getting is you're getting the fibre of the whole food, if you like, and that's going to be great for just slowing down that release of sugar as you consume it. And also it helps to fill you up, you know, it fills you up for longer, which is also brilliant.
Mm. So I know Dale addressed, didn't he, foods to actively kind of help the brain function during the exams a bit in this time. Did you have anything else that you kind of, you know, have researched into that, or do you think he covered that for us really?
I think he touched on that really well. So basically good fats for the memory, mood and concentration. So things like fish, as he talked about, avocado, eggs, nuts, seeds, they're great for all of those things. So he talked about blood sugar balance with the protein, with the carbs, that's really important. And then lots of antioxidants to just help clear that metabolic waste from the brain, just keeping, you know, the brain energized. You know, things like high iron-rich foods are also really beneficial at getting oxygen up to the brain, which is really important. And iron-rich foods, things like meat and green leafy vegetables, those sorts of things, are also better absorbed by the body if you have vitamin C with them. So things like peppers, tomatoes, things like that will help absorb the iron. So those are sort of key nutrients to help get oxygen up to the brain, just to keep it sort of optimally functioning.
Now, one of the things I wanted to touch on with you, Catherine, and we sort of had a quick word about this, was obesity, really. You know, we hear about it all the time. And there's, you know, that difficult line, isn't there, to tread with, particularly, I guess, young girls, but boys as well, I know, of not wanting to put them off eating because, you know, they need to eat, we know that, but equally they're so conscious of what their bodies look like and their shapes. And, you know, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I think education is absolutely key in helping people understand about eating the right food. Some people just aren't aware of the right sorts of foods to eat. And even, you know, thinking about blood sugar balance, that's the key thing to maintaining weight,
right?
So it's really, really important. So you know, I find it great being able to work in schools, work with children, and even when I'm talking to children, at the end the teachers will come up to me and say, I really didn't know that that's how, you know, I should manage my weight, or, you know, I don't talk about it as weight with children, but, you know, make them aware of blood sugar balance and what it does to the body. And also just getting them involved, getting them in the kitchen, getting them cooking. You know, parents don't take children to the supermarket much these days either, so getting them to the supermarket, mm-hmm. looking at the fruit and vegetables, talking about different foods, it's all really, really important in helping them just become more aware of the effect that different foods will have on their bodies.
You're coming back again to what Dale was talking about, you know, about this blood sugar balance. And I mean, I know a lot of us adults, particularly teachers, I think, are just before lunch, you know, they're really, really, it's low, isn't it?
Yes.
And so they quickly have a coffee or shove a chocolate biscuit in. Yep. We've all been doing it for years and years. Well, lots of us have. So I think that's brilliant, the work you're doing, and, you know, not just educating the children, but also the teachers as well.
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely. It's great.
Lydia, I mean, what do you think? You know, you're quite conscious, aren't you, about feeding your children healthily?
Well, I like to think I am. But I'm surprised about the red meat thing. I thought the general, I thought it had no virtues really anymore, and that protein, it was kind of replaced by other kinds of proteins. That's really interesting to hear you say that, accompanied by vitamin C, is still, and especially oxygen to the brain, Catherine. Yep. I'm really surprised by that.
Yeah, definitely. And also the brain is really abundant in zinc. That's a really high nutrient in the brain.
Yeah.
And it contributes both to its structure and its function. And, you know, zinc-rich foods are things like red meat as well. And fish, nuts and seeds, quinoa. I don't know if many people eat quinoa, but that's a great source of protein, and also zinc and iron. So that's a great food. And, you know, aside from foods, there's also other factors people can think about regarding the brain health, and that's things like exercise, just getting the oxygen to the brain, how beneficial that is, and also getting outside for some vitamin D. Vitamin D is also so important for your glucose levels, your blood sugar balancing as well. So also other factors to think about aside from food.
That's and modelling is the other thing that I get caught out with. You know, I have these very high standards for my kids, I think, and then they catch me, you know, and then I'm rumbled. I don't know what to say. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's too late for me. You just I just have to protect your little bodies, you know. But that's is really important too, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's the 80-20 rule. You need to, you know, instill a bit of balance. You don't want it to be too extreme, but, you know, you talk about that 80-20, and that's children understand that, you know, when it's party time, it's a different, isn't it, than at other times.
So 80-20 is okay. Mm. What do you think about that, Shirley? Do you think there's 80-20 in your house?
Think there will be from tomorrow morning. Now that I've met Catherine.
and especially you are literally a glowing endorsement,
yes,
of what you're saying.
Oh,
because
thank you.
your skin is so healthy, your hair is so healthy. It's like, damn it, I need to do that too. I need to do it. But and it's lovely to hear that what you're saying is accessible. I feel like I could manage to do the things that you're saying. Do you feel like that too, Shirley?
I think I'm going to have to maybe get one of these. What are they? Nutribullets.
yeah, Dale's book as well.
Yeah, and Dale's book, and then I'm going to have a good try at it.
Yeah.
Catherine, say there's people listening and they're thinking, I'd love to get her kind of involved in my family's nutrition and stuff. Is that something you can do? Can they look at your Facebook page or?
Yeah, you can look at my Facebook page. Please sign up there. I send out a monthly newsletter with competitions, recipes, information and advice. I also have a website called thefoodteacher.co.uk, and on there you can see the four different areas that I work in. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about a project I'm doing in schools at the moment. I've developed a book called No Kitchen Cookery that's come out of working with several local schools who basically don't have access to kitchens, and I found this is really common across the country. And cooking and nutrition came into the school curriculum in September, so it's kind of on the mainstream, it's raising its profile in schools, and so I'm currently piloting this book across several schools in the country, and so if any schools would be interested in getting involved in that pilot, please contact me. That'd be great.
Fantastic. Now, I know we've Julie has posted some stuff from your website on our Facebook page, namely the apricot and banana almond loaf.
Okay.
The recipe's up there. Thank you very much, Julie. And I'm afraid we're running out of time, so we'll have to just leave it for there.
Yeah.
There for now, Catherine. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for the smoothie.
Oh, yeah. Lovely. Nutribullet, here I come.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.